Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Ask the experts about free fitting on all our kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Now we're going to look ahead to some of the best TV and cinema releases for the month ahead, and I'm joined in studio by freelance arts journalist Aoife Barry and producer and director Brian Redden. Great to see you both ahead of a really good month on the telly and in the cinemas. We have to just chat for a little minute about The Traitors. I know everybody's talking about it, but it's brilliant, isn't it?
It's so good. I was so relieved, I'll be honest. I wasn't sure
what
it would be like. And I actually was so disappointed last night that it wasn't on the telly. I just wanted to sit down and watch another episode of it, which I think is the true
I did too, but I was glad I could go to bed early.
Yeah, that is true. It is. You're kind of getting to sleep about 11 or so. But no, it's great. I mean, Siobhan McSweeney is such a great host. She has kind of the gravitas. She's quite droll. She has the kind of, you know, she's very serious. She terrifies, I think, all of the participants, which is very good.
The eyebrow. Patrick Frayne is writing about her eyebrow.
Her eyebrow.
Sentient eyebrow.
Yeah, like completely. I mean, you wouldn't want her to be giving you that look. She's great. The fashion's brilliant. It really leans into the Irishness. You've got all the kind of Celtic mythology vibes, the wolfhounds in the first episode. And I think everybody who's participants, traitors and faithfuls, are leaning into their role really heavily. And some of the traitors, you know, like Paddy, is finding it a little bit tricky. And I think that's really enjoyable to watch as a viewer. You're like, will he maintain this role of a kind of, you know, double bluff, really, that his son is there and he's a traitor? I wouldn't want to be him. The big question, I think, watching it is always, what would I do if I was a traitor or a faithful? I don't think I could be a traitor.
Yeah, but that's the trick of that whole premise, isn't it? That
totally.
you constantly ask yourself, what would I do in that position? Anyway, that's all good. And it's back on the telly next Sunday, Monday and Tuesday night. Now, Brian, you are taking us to Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the people who are behind The Tinder Swindler, which was a great one.
Yeah.
And it's an actor who is accused of staging an assault on himself,
If
that makes sense.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You know, there's a lot of you talking earlier on there saying this is a great month for TV. It really is. Last month wasn't so great, but there's so much great stuff out there at the moment. And Netflix are churning a lot of these documentaries, these true crime documentaries, like what happened to, what's the truth about this, where's this person missing? And a lot of them are awful. A lot of them are kind of, you know, a small little premise is stressed over two episodes, and it doesn't really deserve two episodes. This one kind of caught my attention there last week, and it's streaming right now, and it's absolutely fascinating. It's a one-off documentary. It's only 90 minutes long, and it's called The Truth About Jussie Smollett, is how you pronounce his name, believe it or not.
We were all calling him Jussie Smollett.
I was calling him Jesse Smollett.
Well, he's got two T's at the end, which generally indicates a Smollett. Yeah.
So who is he? I mean, he's not that well known over here, I don't know, but he's quite a famous American actor. He was in Empire.
Okay.
So Empire was a series that didn't really translate over here, but it was a series about the music industry in America, about the hip-hop industry, and he's quite one of the stars of it. So he's quite a well-known American actor. He's an African-American guy. He's also gay. He's very openly gay. In 2019, he lives in Chicago, so he heads out in the middle of the night when it's really cold, very, very cold, well below zero, and he goes out to get a sandwich. And on his way to get a sandwich out of Subway, he gets assaulted by two white guys who basically start screaming all sorts of homophobic slurs at him. They beat him up, they knock him to the ground, they throw bleach on him, and then they put a noose around his neck, right? And they say, this is MAGA country. Mm-hmm. Right, and they beat him up and off they go. So he goes back home, he gets into his apartment, he calls the cops. The cops come and decide to investigate this. And immediately it's front page news all over the world, this hate crime against this famous actor. But then something doesn't seem right. And the cops start to dig a little deeper. He says two white guys assault him. They can't find them on any CCTV footage. And when they get to the house, he's still got the noose around his neck. And they're going, why has he still got the noose around his neck? And he's also got his Subway sandwich with him still after this violent attack. And they're going, this doesn't seem right. Something smells off here. So they start to do a lot of investigation into it. And they decide that he staged the whole thing himself. Then it emerges that he paid two actors who were extras on the TV series Empire to beat him up. So he did it all for publicity. It was all absolute nonsense, a total lie. He was tried and he was convicted. End of story. And that's what I thought was the case. Then I watched this documentary and I realized maybe that's not the case. He was telling the truth. Like, I just assumed he had set this whole thing up and it was all a lie, it was all for publicity, it was all to get his name out there in the papers. But then you watch this thing and it twists and it turns and it has you 1 minute saying he's absolutely guilty, and then the next minute you're going, oh, hang on a second, the Chicago Police Department are not, you know, as innocent as they appear. The two guys who were arrested and who claimed that he paid them to beat him up, they also don't seem as innocent as they appear. And there's missing footage on CCTV. There's witnesses' statements that weren't taken properly or were ignored. So there's lots of little twists and turns. And so you watch it, one minute you're going, absolutely, he's guilty. Next minute you're going, oh, well, hang on a second, maybe he's not.
Sounds great.
And he's in it. And he's very compelling in it.
Yeah.
And he still maintains his innocence. He still says, I was assaulted that night by two white guys. That is my story. I'm sticking to it.
Mm, but he's an actor. So
But then there is that.
They
do say that in the documentary. Like at one point, the police chief, the head of the police department in Chicago does say that. He says, this is an actor we're dealing with.
I know.
And he's playing a part.
But to be fair to him. But look, listen, you're in two minds about it. It just sounds like we all need to watch it. That's what it sounds like.
It's
on
really
Netflix,
good.
The Truth About Jussie Smollett.
Yes.
Now, Aoife, you've picked the Irish film that's going to represent our country at the Oscars. It's called Sanatorium, directed by Gar O'Rourke. Set in Ukraine, is it?
Yes, it is. So it's Ireland's official selection, basically, to be considered to be nominated for our Best International Feature. So there's sometimes a little bit of confusion over it where people think if it's the Irish selection, it's guaranteed to get a nomination, but that's not the case. It's going to be considered by those who are selecting them. But it means basically we have this great film up there, could potentially be nominated. Directed by Gar O'Rourke, like you're saying, it is set in Ukraine. It's really interesting. It's set in a sanatorium, so kind of a health spa, I suppose you'd call it, in Odessa in Ukraine, post-invasion of Ukraine by Russia. And this crumbling sanatorium is a place where that used to have hundreds of people every day, around 300 people a day, coming in there to get health treatments. They might have various different things that they want to get treated. It could be a back pain. It could be fertility issues. So there's all this big long gamut of things. And now it has about 30 people a day. So there's a lot fewer people visiting there than when it was at its height. It looks like this brutalist Soviet kind of architecture. So it has a strange retro feel about it. Visually, it's really strange and compelling. And the characters in it are both really, really funny, but also kind of sad in some ways. So it really treads this really interesting line tonally between almost feeling like a mockumentary because it's quite funny, but also a depiction of people being very resilient in the face of an invasion. I mean, there are scenes where there's an air raid alarm goes off and people are trying to get along with their everyday activities. And there's one particular person who runs the sanatorium who's very funny, a man who curses a lot, and the opening scene with him sets the tone for him completely. So this is, like I said, directed by Gar O'Rourke. It's going to be in cinemas from Friday. Really interesting kind of capturing of history in Ukraine and also the present moment there too, with some very quirky characters.
Okay, and we'll be watching out for that at the Oscars when we get there early next year.
Black
Rabbit, coming to Netflix. This has Jude Law and Jason Bateman. So they're brothers in this, is that right?
Yeah, it's an unlikely pairing. You wouldn't think of those two as brothers, but it works pretty well. So it's on Netflix on the 18th of September. That's a really good... Netflix do these kind of gritty crime dramas really, really well. And Jason Bateman, you know, was a comic actor for a very long time, but has really proved his dramatic chops now lately, particularly in Ozark. And this is a kind of an Ozark feel to it. So the basic premise, it's called Black Rabbit, and that's a club in New York. It's a restaurant and a club. It's owned by two brothers, played by Jude Law and played by Jason Bateman. They own it together, and then Jason Bateman kind of goes off the rails. He gets into trouble and he owes some mafia types a lot of money. So he comes back to the restaurant and asks his brother for help. So Jude Law reluctantly decides to help him to pay off his debt. And in paying off his debt to the mob, he's told, you got to hit this payment every week. And the week you don't hit it, we're taking over the Black Rabbit. So basically, it's a story about two brothers. You know, one's on the wrong side of the tracks, one's supposedly good, one's supposedly bad. It's about their relationship. It's you know, it's gritty. I mean, the trailer for it, I haven't seen it yet now.
Is it comedy or is it?
No, it's a dark drama, like, you know. Jason Bateman directs a couple of the episodes. He also directed Ozark, so you know, that looks good. And also Laura Linney, who was his co-star in Ozark, also directs some of this as well.
They're all getting it.
Which is interesting.
Turn.
So yeah, it's a gritty crime drama with two really good actors.
Black Rabbit.
Interesting. Black Rabbit.
Out on the 18th of September on Netflix. Now, I'm going to play you this. We're not going to be talking about this, but we think the next thing we're about to discuss is a bit like this. So that's the theme from the US Office, which was a huge success along with the original one. And the next pick that we have, Aoife, this is something of a follow-up to that series? It feels like it might be in the genre of The Office.
Yeah, it's in the universe. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It is in that universe and it is mockumentary. And it, this time the paper is set in a newspaper called the Toledo Truth Teller in Ohio. Greg Daniels and Michael Coleman, who are the creators of The Office, are also the creators of the paper. The big thing for this, with this for Ireland, is that Donald Gleeson is in it. He plays a guy called Ned Sampson, an American. He doesn't retain his Irish accent in it. He does a good American accent in it. And Ned Sampson comes in, is kind of parachuted in as a new editor of this crumbling, terrible newspaper that is so bad that there's no original reporting in it whatsoever. And people don't seem to even really know what original reporting is. So it kind of treads the line between looking at how the media is faring, local media in the States at the moment, that idea of how are these local newspapers faring and do people even care about them at all, and do the people who work for them even care about them? Do the companies who own them even care about them? And then what can these individuals who are always, you know, a little bit sappy and a little bit tragic, like they tend to be in The Office, how will they fare in this universe? It's also got Sabrina Impacciatore in it, who was from The White Lotus, who is a very comedic actress. She's a little bit leaning towards a character, I felt at times in this. I've seen a few preview episodes of it, but I do think that the key to it is Donal. I think Donal Gleeson does hold it all together. It's kind of a slow burn, I felt, comedy wise. It kind of takes a while to set up the characters, and I really did feel watching it that it could do with the second season. I think this first season is very much like bedding in who the people are, what the world is. Maybe the stakes will be upped a bit and we'll get to really know the characters, and that's what happened with something like Parks and Recreation, where that first season you kind of just got to know them. They're kind of figuring out who the characters were and the world they were in, and then you really get to explore it. So I think this probably does, I'd imagine, have a 2-season deal. You can't imagine it only being one.
So we need to have a bit of patience with it.
I think you do need patience with this one. Some of the jokes aren't as quick-witted. I mean, I think as well there's the issue where you're always going to be comparing the UK office with the US office, which are really different. I'm more of a UK office fan than US. So if you're into that slightly less menacing comedy that's in the US one, then undoubtedly you like what's going on, okay, I think, in the paper. But yeah, it does take a while to take off.
And that's out from tomorrow, which is the 5th of September.
It'll have a lot of people,
Sky,
I think, interested in this.
Called The Paper, and we'll watch it because Donald Gleeson is in it.
Yes, we'll always watch it.
That's what
we're
doing. Now, The House of Guinness, this is something that we've talked about on the programme. You've both seen a bit of this, have you?
I've just seen the trailer, I haven't seen the show.
I've seen the first episode of it, yeah.
Oh, well, tell us.
I'm intrigued. As a not very big Peaky Blinders fan.
I'm not a big Peaky Blinders fan, but this is more in the world of The Crown, I think.
Okay, you know?
So it's kind of like, it's like Netflix are looking for a next big family dynasty to tell the story of, and they've chosen the Guinnesses. So it's kind of, like, what's interesting about it is I didn't realise, like, all the stuff in it I didn't know, you know, so it kind of sent me to Wikipedia to try and look up the Guinnesses and see. So it's basically, it's the House of Guinness. It's set in the 1860s, and it starts off with the death of Benjamin Guinness. Now, Benjamin Guinness didn't create Guinness. Guinness is created by Arthur Guinness, who was his grandfather, right? So the grandson of Arthur Guinness, called Benjamin Guinness, he's the guy who kind of made Guinness an international brand, you know, and really made the stout really, really famous. So anyway, he dies and he's got 4 kids, and he kind of bequeaths the Guinness brewery to his 2 sons, Arthur, who's the great grandson of the original Arthur, and Edward. Right now, the other 2 kids are left out of it. So what happens then is this kind of family drama, family saga, where 2 kids are in charge and 2 kids aren't in charge, have nothing to do with the business, and they feel, you know, really let down by this.
And Arthur and Edward, do they get on?
Not necessarily, no. Yeah. Arthur kind of takes the reins a little bit. This is all kind of pretty much well established in the first episode. So it's intriguing because he dies in 1868, I think, which is around the time of the Fenian Rising. So there's a lot of political undertones in this as well. And of course, the Guinnesses were landlords, and they owned the Ivy Gardens, and they owned half of Dublin and a lot of Ireland, a lot of places in Ireland. So a lot of that, it kind of taps into them as landowners and Anglo-Protestants. And it's actually it's brilliant. It's quite gripping.
I think we're going
to
like it.
And obviously it's Stephen Knight, so it's the same guy behind Peaky Blinders. So as a little touch of that to it, but it's more like The Crown, I think, than Peaky Blinders.
I know we're going to watch that. I know we are.
All right, listen,
we have to leave it there. That's The House of Guinness, which is coming up this month on Netflix, along with all of that other great stuff. Thank you both, Aoife and Brian.